Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my cohort today is Michael Nerdsoul, the video avenger of blurredom and geekdom, joining us to talk about Marvel's TV universe, specifically The Gifted, and we may drift over into the Netflix shows if we have any time, but welcome.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me. The Gifted is super fun. Marvel's really killing it right now, so I'm super psyched to talk about it.
Yeah, me too, because like when I saw how you were tweeting some of the same stuff I was tweeting about how awesome both The Gifted and Cloak and Dagger were over the summer, I'm like, we got to talk about this when the Gifted's coming back.
Yeah, it's super close. Like, what is Tuesday? Tuesday is the 27th or something, or whatever day that is. It's going to be here fast.
Yeah, the 25th. September 25th is...
25th.
Gifted Season 2 returns. So we're going to talk about Season 1 and what we hope to gather from Season 2. Now, Slice of Sci-Fi listeners may be aware that last year, for Season 1, I did a 5 episodes in review of the series. That, was just so much to dive into, so much deliciousness. So we'll link to that in the show notes. But tell my listeners what you found exciting about The Gifted.
What I found, I guess that it was good. And I know that sounds funny, but when the show was first pitched, I was like, man, they need to just leave it alone. Nobody wants to see a mutant family like running from the law or something. This is gonna be dumb. And I was wrong, and I'm glad I was wrong. Like, Polaris is great, the family is great. Like, Amy actually kind of like pushed me over, because I was like, man, I really don't want to know if I want to watch this show. And when Root, you know, Amy Root from Person of Interest, I was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna give this a shot. And of course, it was just good, man. From the first episode on to the last one, even the kind of like the in and out day players, or you know, random actors on the side, they're just doing character work, they come through. This is just a good story that I'm interested in. So just the world, I think, is what excites me, because I feel like they're doing a good job of representing the family, the government, stuff like that.
Yeah, I was excited that they were coming from the viewpoint of a world without the X-Men. Now, I had initially thought they were going to inhabit the world after, what was it, in the comics, Scarlet Witch, in her grief, uttered the words, "No more mutants."
Oh, yeah.
Right. I thought they were going down that line, but it's something totally different that I'm not sure they are going to fully tell us what, but the characters are from the comics. When they put in the Strucker twins, when they put in the Cuckoos, when they put in Thunderbird, I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting. And what I loved, I enjoyed the fact that you had a family where, what's his name, Reed, Stephen Moyer's character, was part of the system that was chasing down mutants. And then he realizes, oh my God, my kids are mutants. They're coming for my kids. You know, I have to draw the line somewhere. And they go on the run. And he actually puts himself in danger to find help with the people he has been helping to prosecute. And I don't think it was until the second episode that I realized who was created this show. Matt Nix, who created Burn Notice. And I just went, sold. I'm done. I'm here forever. Because I loved Burn Notice.
On the sneak, Burn Notice is a real good show.
And if there are some parallels in the journey that the Strucker family is taking and the journey that Michael Weston took, because he was living his life, not bothering anybody, and then he gets kicked out of his comfort zone and he has to fight against the people he used to help hunt down. He's siding with the people who he used to be against, or he would have qualms working with. And it's a similar sort of setup there. And I enjoyed that. I'm like, Matt Nix has some issues he's working out, but that's cool because he's telling a good story.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man. It's just the way, you know, like from Reed's standpoint, he's, you know, he has to be a dad. He has to be a father. He has to be a husband. But then, you know, finding out his own family history, which is something that throws a curveball at him. And then you have the Jace character. So you have Jace, who's kind of like chasing him, but then he has his own issues with what is, like, are we going too far as being legal, as far as being, like, I guess officers or agents or whatever, and what is too far, and is too far okay in this situation? Like, do the ends justify the means? There's a lot of just relatable issues and themes that they go through. And when, you know, when you throw in the good acting and also being mutants doesn't hurt either, but it's just great, like a great human story that they're telling where it's like, do you give up your family or, you know, do you in fact side with them, fight for them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. The, his journey was really, you know, almost heart crushing because you saw him, he had a job to do. He was starting to ask a few questions, and then he had his mind sort of played with, and then watching him relive the trauma of losing his child over and over again, because he couldn't remember it the first time. That was heartbreaking. That was just seeing, I mean, that's in my book, golf clap to Kobe Bell, because he killed it, because you saw the look of heartbreak on his face as he realized he had forgotten her and then forgotten that she died and was living it again. But then at the end where he's confronting, oh, what's his name? The doctor at the end who's trying to,
oh yeah.
He's trying to improve the hounds.
Dr. Campbell. I always call him Crow Marty, but yeah. big shout out to everybody who watched Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Everyone who got that, give yourself another point on your geek card.
Yeah, another great show that only had one season, but that was a good one.
Yeah, so when he crossed that line of literally cracking a few eggs, but then the cuckoos stepped it up another level, breaking out everybody. I'm like, oh, this is going to be messy.
How do you feel about them? Because they present a very interesting problem for both sides.
They are...
Because you can't trust them.
You can't trust them at all. And if I remember correctly, it's one of their adventures in the comic books. They were sort of like the hitmen of the Hellfire Club, if I remember correctly. And their powers, when they all three are together, which they are now, how do you know who's manipulating who? Because even the person that considers themselves their leader, their boss, can you really 100% trust them? Because we saw how easy one of them manipulated the situation so that the underground would go free. her other two sisters manipulated them without consequence, conscience, or thought to anything but her own agenda. And I'm like, oh, that's cold. And you could probably easily put it that one girl they broke out, the one girl they rescued, died because of her.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you have someone who, like, Proudstar, when you have someone like Proudstar who's, like, trying to be the best leader he can in this situation, You know, that's a lot for him to handle, especially when people start dying and it's something that you were manipulated into, you know what I'm saying? It's, man, they gotta go. And I mean, they make for great storytelling, but if I was in that situation, they definitely gotta go.
Yeah, there's gonna be a clash if those two stay on the same side. But if I remember correctly, the Cuckoos went off. They took Andy and Polaris and the Cuckoos.
I think Sage went with them too. I think.
I don't recall.
Yeah, I think Sage, the kind of like computer numbers lady, I think she went with them too.
Yeah, I think she did. I think.
Because with the, you know, with the power that they already have with the Inner Circle, which, you know, we don't know everybody that's on there, but we assume that there's some kind of power structure there because they're like, you know, influencing like the government and stuff like that, and you know, corporations. It's gonna be a tough road for our, I guess, Strucker family and just the handful of mutants that are left on the, I guess, quote, good guy side, you know, because it's like, it's kind of hard to see who is the good and bad guys, because, you know, to a certain degree, the Inner Circle has a point, because, you know, hey, the X-Men, and we don't know how long ago, because they're like fuzzy on that, which I kind of like, but they're fuzzy on how long ago it was. But apparently the X-Men tried and the X-Men did not succeed. And I'm pretty sure it's not because the X-Men didn't, you know, try hard enough. It's just that the government has probably decided if these powers exist and we can't control them, then they've got to go.
Right. I'm going to guess, just based on how advanced the Sentinel Services is, and I'm going to guess it's somewhere between 4 and maybe like 5 or 6 years since the incident, which is, did you catch the Easter egg that about the July 15th incident?
Well, I didn't. Somebody who watched the AfterBuzz show messaged us talking about the link between that and Logan.
Oh, no, no, no. That's not the link I'm talking about.
Oh, what is it then?
Well, they call it the July 15th incident. July 15th, I think it's either 91 or 92, is the day that Marvel went public. It's the date of their IPO.
Oh, wow.
And when they said July 15th incident, I'm like, July 15th, what from the comics is that? And I looked it up. I'm like, nicely done. Nicely done.
That's nice to have. That's cool. But one thing I do like about this show, speaking of like Easter eggs like that, I like how, I'll say this. I feel that the people that are making this show actually care about making a good show. You know how sometimes you feel like, hey, they just have this property, so they know this property can make money. I mean, of course, they want to make money, but I think at the same time, they're like, hey, we can do something cool with this. You know, I feel like they're trying, instead of sometimes when you see a property and you know it's just, hey, they're trying to go through the motions to get to the money part. And, you know, like small stuff like that, they didn't have to put that in there, but it was nice, you know, or even like the smaller things they do on social media with like the Mutants Unite website and stuff like that. Like the small stuff that they do, they don't have to. And it's nice little tie-ins, like the little commercials or with the ads, or even when they, you know, they come in and give you a secret message that happened to do with that episode. This show is just like, it's exceeded my expectations. And that's why I'm so excited for this coming season.
Yeah, have you seen the trailers for season 2?
Yes. Ah, man.
I don't know who that new character is, the one who seems to be literally large and in charge and completely ruthless, that woman. Yeah. Is she supposed to be one of the Black Queens?
The only thing I can assume, because I'm not sure, I was looking at... I always meant to look up her name, but I kept forgetting to. I was like I think I've watched the trailer say 3 or 4 times. And I'm like, hey, I'm gonna look up her name. And then I forget to look up her name. But whoever she is, I assume that mind control does not work on her, because there's no way the cuckoos are going to like let her boss them around unless she's like definitely like top tier, like Omega level. Or I don't know if they brought that into the show or not. So maybe Omega level isn't considered, but if it is, she's probably not to be messed with.
Yeah, it looks like, just from the commercial, it looks like they have a lot of high-powered mutants on their side, and I'm interested to see, will that shift Sentinel Services' focus? Because we already know that that group, to some level, has infiltrated the government already. So how effective can Sentinel Services be against them?
Yeah, that's true, because with the Mutant Underground being sort of, I don't know if I'd say, you know, on their last leg, but they're not looking good. And, you know, with this new threat, maybe we see a teaming up of the Mutant Underground and the Sentinel Services, or maybe the cartel comes back into play in some way. That's something that could be interesting, because they are going to be a very large threat, unless they're going to be more of a subversive threat.
We shall see. But I'm, like I said, Matt Nix is running this show. He has said in the past, and he still says, he's been an X-Men fan since he was a kid. So that, you know, you can see which showrunners are fans of the properties they're writing for now. And I'm just so happy that we are in a time where the comics that we loved as kids, and to this day still, we love the comics, we love the characters, are getting such awesome, responsible, faithful, and just satisfying storytelling.
Yeah, with some actors that are really shining.
Yes. What's his name? The guy who plays Eclipse. He is Eclipse and Thunderbird. Those two guys are really.
Let me look.
Sean Teal.
Yeah, Sean Teal and Blair Redford.
Yeah.
So yeah, those guys kill it. Polaris, Emma's. Hold up. Let me look. Yeah. So she's cool. Jamie Chung has been in the game for a minute. She's like, I've always been a fan of hers, but like, they all come to play, and it shows.
Yeah, I want to see them do more with Blink. There's so much more she could be doing. I just hope that they use her well, because like you said, she seems to have embraced the character of Clarice Blink very, very well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think where she's at now, well, I'm assuming she's going to expand her abilities, because even in that trailer that they dropped for Comic-Con, and then they dropped something newer a little bit later, you see, it seems like she's a little more confident in her power. So hopefully that definitely happens, and hopefully the Mutant Underground gets some stronger people, because it looks like the Inner Circle is getting like all the good picks. Like if you look in like in sports terms, it's like these guys are getting like all the good picks. I'm like, yo, when is the Mutant Underground gonna get like a first round draft pick or something? Like, where are they gonna get somebody?
Oh, it's like the New England Patriots and the Cleveland Browns.
Oh man,
did I go there? I'm sorry.
That's cold. It's like the Cleveland Browns, they have a lot of heart, but it's like, yeah, you know you're gonna lose.
Yeah. Not a good year. I said I can't talk. My Orioles lost over 100 games this year, and they reached the 100 loss mark in record time. Oh yeah.
Wow.
50 games behind the wild card spot. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. Well, I guess, you know, there's always next year.
Not with this owner, but oops, I said that out loud. Anyway, so September 25th is when this deliciousness starts up again. I'm looking at here. Oh, yeah.
It looks so good.
The first episode is written by Matt Nix and directed by Robert Duncan McNeil. Nice.
We're going to get so much because the trailer is pretty long. It's like a 3-minute trailer, but imagine that's only scratching the surface of what actually is going to happen this year. Like, it's going to be good. I'm excited to see who. I want to see where Jace ends up, you know, like, is he going to, you know, fall deeper into the dark side? Is he going to, you know, snap out of it? You know, because it did look interesting when they came over to his house and his wife looked at him like, I thought you were, you know, like, I thought you were like just an agent and, you know, you were like, you know, just kind of like doing the law or something like, and you're like, holding guns to kids and stuff, like it, you could definitely see where he felt kind of bad about it.
Yeah, the look on his wife's face when who was it, Amy Acker, Caitlin said, "Do you remember pointing guns at my children?" And she was like, "Oh, really?"
Yeah, you probably didn't tell your wife about that, did you?
So yes, I am happy that Marvel's television is starting to catch up to their movie things. Like I said, Cloak and Dagger this summer was just a delight from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Interesting definitely. To see what they're going to do with season 2 because we have Mayhem in the house now.
Yeah. And there's so, man, I'm trying to think where the good thing about Cloak and Dagger is that, and I know a lot of people would like, you know, comment on me or like send me messages saying like the show was so slow, but I think the show worked in that way to show us who these kids were and who they are now. And then we spent a good amount of time kind of getting to know the city, like with the young lady's aunt, and I can't think of her name, but she was talking about like the history of like New Orleans and you know, what the supernatural side. And then you had, you know, of course, all the message or all the information from, of course, Roxxon and all that. It's, I think they spent a long time and a lot of time, you know, valuable time treating us to exactly where they are in their lives and exactly where they are as far as what the city is, like the city as a character. And I enjoyed it. It was way more, you know, like character centric than I thought it was going to be. Because when they said they were going to be teens, I was worried. I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to watch some like young adult stuff. And I was wrong. And I'm glad I was wrong because I was like, please don't suck. And I was hooked. I was really hooked.
Yeah. I think in the original, the very first 4-issue miniseries of Cloak and Dagger, they were teens. What I was concerned about was separating them from New York City. Because originally, they were part of Hell's Kitchen. They worked with Daredevil. So I had been sitting there trying to figure out, okay, are they going to just get rid of the Daredevil connection? What are they doing? So the slow build of establishing them and their lives in New Orleans and giving everybody a feel of the city and how that city is a part of their lives, a part of who they are, I thought that was beautifully done. That was well done because you needed to do that for people like me who were old school. Hey, these kids are in New York City. What gives here? But the fact that they tied it to New York, some people missed it the first time around, but the, what's her name? O'Reilly?
Yeah, O'Reilly.
Yeah. She was friends with Misty Knight. They actually dropped Misty Knight's name in there. I'm like, okay, so they are keeping the New York City connection, but it's tentative, you know. That
and it's also part of the Netflix stuff, which is, it's just crazy because, and oh, we got another tie when the dude was talking about he was talking to what's her name? I can't think of her name now. Dagger. When he was talking to Dagger, and I can't think of her name. It's like Tandy. He's talking to Tandy, and he references Stark. And I was like, Oh, snap. Because he references Stark and Hammer, and I was like, wow, okay, cool. And I like how they, the good thing that I like that they did here is what they didn't do in season one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Even though season two and beyond gets a lot better, but they didn't like try to force the references. It was just something that came naturally. And I like, even like that Misty Knight one, I was like, oh, what? Huh? What? Like, I had to rewind it. I was like, hold on, what? Because he was like, that doesn't freak you out? She's like, psh, man, I've seen it all.
I just love that they got that in there. And I'm hoping that one of the other series gets like a wink, wink, you know, nod toward Cloak and Dagger in one of the Netflix series. But they are keeping them all together. They, by saying that even though this is set in New Orleans, this is part of our larger television universe. And I truly appreciated that. And the way they tied their powers in toward whatever it is that's underneath of New Orleans, I was confused at the very beginning, because in the comics, Tandy Bowen was living the privileged, wealthy life, and Ty was the one who was living on the streets. At the beginning, they...
Oh, so they switched it on everybody.
But did you notice at the end that Tandy went home and Ty started living in the church just like they did in the comics? I thought, I'm like, okay, that was a development I did not see coming. But by making Ty a fugitive and, you know, switching it up where he's living in the church and she's gone back home, I'm like, okay, that's going to work. That I like that.
Yeah, it definitely showed how this tragedy affected both families. And I really appreciated the moment where they went, I guess, to the river. They went to the river for, like, you know, kind of like to memorialize her father, and that Tyrone came with them. Like, I really thought that was something special. That was nice. So that there is, you know, there is a connection there that's deeper, you know, that's, you know, like almost like family, maybe, you know, but at least the mom does know who he is. And like, it's kind of cool to see that connection and just taking that time to like build them as characters so that they know each other. So yeah, I think this show is going to be, it's going to be real good.
Freeform is also enjoying how the response, the critical, both critical response and fan response to that show. They're like, oh, we have another hit on our hand. Let's throw more money at them and get them a season two right now. Cause they announced a season two right before or right at the season finale. So I'm like, don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I don't think that they thought it was probably because, you know, the show does have a very, slow intention pace, but I think the fans were ready for that because now we have a universe that has so many different moving parts. You know, you got Daredevil, or you got like Jessica Jones, or you have like Punisher or Luke Cage, but then you also have Cloak and Dagger, where it's like, so you get your different flavors. So every show isn't like, you know, beat them up as fast as possible. Some shows are different. You got different people, different like walks of life. And I like the fact that they're not in New York, because now you can see that, oh, well, you can do a universe like this because, yes, things happen in New York. But like, for instance, I'm in Los Angeles. If something happens in Phoenix, you know, yeah, it happens. But like, I don't know about it like immediately, or I'm not like thinking about it. I have my own life, you know. So it's like these things can be all in the same universe without directly referencing each other all the time, because just like in the real world, you know, you don't, like, right now, you're in Maryland, correct? So, all right. So you're not thinking all the time about what's going on in, say, Kentucky or West Virginia. But, I mean, it's still happening, you know. But so it's like you can do these things without directly referencing each other all the time. And I think it's because, you know, when we were younger, Marvel is always, you know, in New York. So it's like, oh, Hulk's right here. I'll just get his help. But like in the real world where you can like flesh it out on the screen, you can be like, oh, well, these people live in New Orleans, and these people might live in Oklahoma City, but these people live in Philly, and these people live in LA, and these, and like, you can build these stories and just change the not the geographic just a little bit, because the geographic isn't always directly tied to the story. Like, for instance, Spider-Man is kind of tied to New York, you know, that's kind of like what he had. But for instance, the X-Men, and I know people will hate me for this, but the X-Men aren't specifically tied to New York. They don't have to be in upstate New York. They could be out somewhere in the middle of Tennessee, just somewhere where you can have a big, nice school and some nice grass. Like, like, you know, so they don't have to be tied to New York. I mean, it would be nice, but they don't specifically have to.
Yeah, it's funny because when I first started reading the X-Men and we were talking about the mansion, for some reason I thought the mansion was in Connecticut. I did.
Yeah, because it's you know, any kind of very very nice area where it's like, you know, open space, kind of rural area, you could use that. So you could, you know, if you wanted, you could be like, oh, well, the X-Mansion, or you could say something like the X-Mansion used to be here, but it was attacked and they had to move it to such and such. And, you know, there's some things where you can kind of branch out from New York and don't have to be in New York. Kind of like the Stark thing. He could be in any big city.
Because he's got buildings, you know, businesses, offices everywhere. So he has a legit reason to be in a lot of different places, which is,
yeah,
helpful. The I think that Freeform may have been hedging their bets on the reception that Cloak and Dagger was going to get, because I think the Legion, which aired on FX, it did well numbers wise, but it didn't do as well as they were hoping. And I'm like, Legion is a unique kind of character, and that's gonna cater to a smaller group of X-Men fans,
yeah,
than Cloak and Dagger.
And see, I haven't watched it yet. I've heard it's great, but I haven't watched it yet.
It's an acquired taste. I kind of lost interest for season two. I will admit that. I was curious what they were going to do with season one, because you're talking about someone who has multiple personalities, multiple powers based on those personalities, and oh yeah, he's Professor Xavier's son, depending on which timeline you go. Actually, I think in all of them, he's Professor Xavier's son.
Yeah, I think he's always Professor's son. So yeah, I think.
Yeah, and that's the weirdness of his existence in the earlier comics where we were first introduced to him. I mean, I read that long time ago, and I'm like, I still go, what was I reading again?
Yeah, because what it's like, they introduced what Legion Quest like right before Age of Apocalypse, right? Or was it like just after? I can't remember how they did it. Yeah, because like Age of Apocalypse, even though it's my favorite story, I have all the issues separated. Maybe I need to get the omnibus or something, but I have all the issues, like every single one, the outside stuff, the inside stuff, tie-ins, everything. And he does kind of come out of nowhere. It just seemed like he came out of nowhere when I was younger. Maybe he didn't, but I feel like when I was younger, I was reading X-Men, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm your son. It's like, what? It's like, hold up, from when? Like, this doesn't even have a girlfriend.
They tied it. The story I remember, what's her name? Moira from...
Yeah.
That island, the one in Ireland, was his mother.
Muir Island, yeah.
That was the one story that I remember, that Xavier and Moira, that was their child. That's how he was so powerful, but something else happened to him that made him fractured. So that, I think it was Xavier created something to sort of keep his powers in check, and then somebody took him to use him against Xavier, and I don't remember the rest of it.
Yeah, I just remember he showed up, And I think he was trying to kill Magneto, ended up killing his dad. And then that's what kind of sparked the Age of Apocalypse thing. And then, of course, my favorite story ever. And then the end.
Cool. So, yeah, I think they were hedging their bets because Legion didn't do the blockbuster numbers that I think Fox had been expecting. And then Cloak and Dagger, like, I think Gifted came out first and then Cloak and Dagger. And everybody's like, ooh, okay, we have two legit fan favorites here. Let's go.
That whole time is really sweet for fans because I think, especially with Cloak and Dagger, The Gifted probably less so because it's a, you know, kind of based on, well, not based on the X-Men, but related very closely to the X-Men, that, you know, it even has the X in the title, the, you know, well, for the eye. So I think those are two shows that a lot of fans were like, I don't know. And then when they ended up being really good, it's like, oh, this isn't even like, you know, like, okay, this is exceptional. Like, I can't wait until next week. Like, this show is so good that even my wife, who's not super into like superhero stuff, she enjoys. Like, it's very rare that she enjoys like, you know, any kind of like superhero or sci-fi stuff. She did enjoy Infinity War, but she had one of the funniest reactions at the end of the movie. Like, the movie ends and she said, that's the end. I was like, yeah, that's the end. And she said, well, when's the next one? I said, it's next year. She said, well, what am I supposed to do with that? I was like, look, man, it's their plan. But yeah, so she actually likes The Gifted. And I think it's because they give you enough of, you know, kind of like the family vibe, stuff that we can all relate to, things that we can all relate to, being like, say, blamed for something or persecuted for something or running from something or maybe trying to protect someone, even though it's not your skin in the game. You know, we can all relate to kind of these themes. And, you know, I think it brought in a lot of people that were like, hey, I kind of like this superhero thing, and, you know, it's okay. And then, you know, fans that are like, I've loved X-Men forever. And I think that's why that's a super big hit. With Freeform, it's already kind of like the perfect demographic, because Freeform is kind of like, it's kind of like ABC's kind of like, you know, family, young adultish kind of area, because you have grownish on there. So, you know, I think a lot of people were like, I don't know, you know, this is a superhero thing. The trailer, I don't know if it's really grabbing me. And then you get into it and you're like, I really like these people. Like, I understand what this boy's going through. You know, like, you know, his brother's gone, his family, you know, his mom is kind of like overprotecting him. His dad's kind of turning inward, not really saying anything at all. You know, then you got Tandy's family where it's, you know, dad died in a weird way, you know, disrespected, and, you know, people are trying to like blame him for it. And there's a lot of stuff where it's like, you want to vindicate someone or you want to get your kind of closure. And I think, you know, a lot of people can relate to wanting your closure over either the death of your brother or the death of your father and stuff like that. So it really connected in a very good way. And I'm glad, because we got two more good shows, even though it's a problem because you can't watch everything, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I think, a couple of years ago when ABC Family rebranded themselves as Freeform, they were trying to expand the demographic because they went from like teenager, like 18 to, actually no, they went from like 14 to 22, and they've expanded that to 14 to 34. I'm like, what, huh? Where'd you get that demographic from? But they are appealing to a lot of that millennial, you know, post-college, going into work or going into college group. It depends on the show, because Siren is really, really good. It really is.
Oh, okay.
People like, what is it, Grownish, the Bold Type.
Yeah.
There's another show that's on there. I can't remember what it is.
But the bold type, I saw the trailer for that. That looks like it's good, but I'm just like, I can't watch everything. But it does look, because I saw a couple of ads for it, a couple of spots, and I actually like laughed for it. So I'm like, if this is just a taste, this is probably a good show.
Yeah, it got a lot of critical reception and a lot of fan reception. And there's definitely a lot of female empowerment, women laying down the law and going, oh, really, guys? Seriously? And I was upset that Freeform canceled Stitchers because I liked that, but I can see where it maybe kind of didn't fit, but they just needed one more season to wrap it up. Come on, dude, seriously?
Yeah, it's just like, let them finish it.
Yeah, Siren is really good. I'm curious to see where they go with that. Since Cloak and Dagger tie into our heroes in New York, especially in the comics, since they did work with Daredevil and Luke Cage, what do you think of the new seasons of the Marvel shows on Netflix?
I've enjoyed all of them. I really have. The second go-round for Jessica Jones was... Now, I'll say this with a caveat. If you are depressed or going through a depression, do not watch Jessica Jones season 2. Because I think it should be called Jessica Jones... Broken people. So because nobody is having a good life or a happy time in that show in season 2. But it's very good. It's just that there is just some sad, dark emotions and depression, and just people are just burning the candle at both ends. And it's hard. It's good TV, but if it triggers you in a certain way, then it might not be for you. But Jessica Jones season 2 was really good. Her friend, her mom alone is good. But then you have the issue with her coworker, and he's going through his own stuff. It was really good. The family down the hall, or was it upstairs, I believe? That was great. Then you had Luke Cage season 2, which I think really stepped it up. Like, I already liked the first season, and this one, just having Mariah really just break down and drive her own self crazy, I think made this season like well worth watching. Also seeing Bushmaster and why he's angry, what he wants, you know, what he's so mad about. It was some good TV. And your boy Iron Fist, I have to give him a kudos. First season, I was not pleased. But this season is... First thing, I'm going to give a shout out to the physical acting for the lady that plays Colleen Wing. Her body language, her facial expressions are everything in the show. Like, sometimes her facial expressions say like a whole paragraph. But I think that the guy who plays Danny Rand, I can't think of his name right now, but his actual fighting looks more natural this season. The brother and sisters of Ward and I can't think of her name. The brother and sister are a lot more interesting this season. So this season did a lot of things right where the first season, I think, was tough to get through. It's also a shorter season. So instead of being 13 episodes, it's 10. And the funny thing is, I didn't know that before I started watching. I just started watching it. And when I was in the 10th episode, I was like, this is weird. It seems like they're wrapping up. And I was like, oh, that's it. But I've always liked the...
And see, that's how I felt about Luke Cage season 1. They probably should have been 12 episodes, not 13. I wonder if they're going to switch some of the other shows to 10 episodes to sort of tighten up some of the storytelling, because that was a little bit of a problem for me. But if 10 episodes, I haven't seen Iron Fist yet. I just haven't had the time. I just,
yeah, there's so much stuff going on. It's hard to catch, you know, everything, especially when it happens. Cause I think I watched it over like 4 nights or something like that. Like, I think I watched like 2 episodes, then like 3, and then 2 or something like that. That's like, so I kind of watched it over like 4 nights or so. I think I finished it. I want to say I finished it like Sunday night, something like that. Started on Friday, finished on Sunday, and it's all good. Yeah.
We have the latest Daredevil trailer dropping this week where, you know, we get Daredevil season 3 finally in October. And we're going to get Wilson Fisk again, which is going to be so delightful.
Yeah, it's, man, I'm, from the narration, I am so ready for this, because with his narration and the way Luke Cage season 2 ends, I think we're going to end up having two heroes that need to be kind of like brought back a little bit from the other side by their friends, i.e., you know, say Claire or Danny Rand or Colleen or Misty Knight or even Punisher come back and be like, look, man, you don't want to do this. You want to go this far, you know. So because Luke Cage is starting to dip his toe into, you know, of course, into the criminal underworld. And then with the narration, like, I'd rather die as the devil than live as Matt Murdock. Well, it sounds like good TV, but it sounds bad for the person behind that mask. Because you've got to be living a hard life to say that.
Mm-hmm. I think they hinted that this was going to be the Daredevil Born Again storyline.
Oh, okay. Because I don't remember. The last thing I read was The Man Without Fear, which was a while back.
Let's see.
I'm trying to think. That's when Man Without Fear was, what happened? He had to leave for whatever reason. I remember Black Panther came in for a little bit. I'm trying to remember exactly what was his reason for not staying. But I'm sure, you know, when this goes up, people will let us know.
Yeah, I don't remember what year the 1986 was when Born Again came out, and it was Frank Miller.
Okay.
So you know it's going to be dark. So if that's the storyline they follow, I'm going to need like a nice big stuffed animal to cuddle.
Yeah, because it's, and I do like that he's back to the old like mask and stuff. Like, I'm super excited about that. I don't know if he's going to wear it the whole time, but at least in the promo, he's back with just like the, you know, like the black cloth over his face or whatever. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious who they're going to get, because if I remember correctly, yeah, Ben Urich was in the comic book version of Born Again, but they killed him in season 1. So.
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah. And a great actor too. And I was like, when he died, I was like, man, yeah, he's too good at what he does for them to leave him alive.
Shoot, I felt like that about was it Copperhead in Cottonmouth? Cottonmouth,
oh, yeah.
In season 1 of Luke Cage. I'm like, why'd you kill him off so soon, dude?
Yeah, because it's weird. But then, you know, with Mariah and like Mariah and Shades, especially in season 2, just seeing how she melts down, and you're like, wow, this, yeah, she would definitely kill her brother. Like, at first I thought it was kind of out of place, but then I'm like, nah, she's crazy.
No, I was totally down with her, you know, with him being killed. It's just like, you know, he could have stayed around another 2 episodes. Just saying. Yes, I'm looking forward to Daredevil season 3. I'm hoping, Because they keep saying we're not going to get a season two of Defenders, and that would break my heart because I enjoyed the Defenders comic long, long ago. But if they eliminate the Defenders but give us Daughters of the Dragon with Colleen Wing and Misty Knight teamed up, I will forgive. Another thing I thought of when you were talking, back when you were talking about the having the TV shows expand to different locales, it reminded me, isn't there a title called West Coast Avengers?
Yeah, you're right. You got the West Coast Avengers. I don't know if they still run it, but I know they did back in the day.
Yeah, so why can't we get like a Netflix original movie, West Coast Avengers? That'd be cool. Tied in with the rest of the Marvel Universe.
Wow, yeah, that would be fun. Because I was always wondering if they were going to do something like that, doing like a Netflix movie, or I guess since the Disney service is coming soon, like, you know, just kind of like a you know, Marvel movie, but just like, you know, straight to, well, not straight to DVD, but a streaming film, I guess you could say, you know, and it could be something like smaller, like, you know, like West Coast Avengers, but, you know, do something that's, you know, not world ending, but just something that's, you know, still some high stakes, but something a little cheaper, and see how that worked.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that bugged me, because DC Universe puts out these original animated features, either collections of short films or full-blown feature-length animated films. They put them out to Blu-ray. They put them on their streaming service. Actually, a couple of them showed up on CWC. Like, if you go to CWC.com, you can watch Justice League Dark Justice League Dark for free, which is, I thought, was awesome because it had Matt Ryan doing John Constantine, which I will always love.
Yep. And Swamp Thing straight represents in that.
That's going to be cool. And then Matt Ryan as Constantine is going to be part of Legends of Tomorrow starting this season.
Oh, so he's going to be the main cat? Oh, okay.
He is going to be a regular starting this season. This upcoming season is season 4 of Legends of Tomorrow. So he's joining the cast, which has me tickled pink.
Yeah, even though I really wish Constantine wasn't canceled.
Oh, because me too.
I love that show. I'll say this. If Constantine was like either on FX or if Constantine was, say, on Netflix, it would still be on now.
Constantine should have been on the CW from the get-go. It should not have been on NBC.
Do you think it's not really, because you could line it right up with like a Supernatural, so never mind. It could be fine. Yeah, you could use Supernatural as like a lead into it or something like that.
Supernatural has its dark moments, and John Constantine ties into, we've already seen him tie into Arrow, and he appeared in a couple of episodes of Legends of Tomorrow last season. He fits in with DC TV Universe. He should have been on the CW from the get-go.
Were they trying to pair him with, like, Grimm or something? But Grimm is off now, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, Grimm, I think Grimm's last season was Constantine's first, but it didn't fit.
Oh, so that must have been what they were trying to do. But it's such a different show.
Yeah. It didn't fit with NBC's, even with NBC's, who else did, NBC had another show that was on there. It was Grimm and something else.
Grimm was a show that I thought was cool for a while, but then when they brought the girlfriend back from the dead, I'm like, nah, I'm cool, I'm out. I was like, nope, I'm not going to do it. Nope, I won't do it.
Yeah, but no, yeah, Constantine was just on the wrong network at the wrong time.
Yeah.
It's such a shame because I love that show. I love that show. I bought it on Blu-ray. I had bought it on iTunes because I wasn't sure if I'd get to see it every week. I love that show.
As someone who loves supernatural action and supernatural horror, like, I'm so mad that show didn't go well. Because, I mean, I know he's on Legends of Tomorrow, but it won't be fully the same.
It won't be the same. Yeah.
But you never know. Since he's still around, I'm assuming that there's probably still a baby hope that it can come back in some form.
Well, there's another, like, an animated Constantine called City of Demons, which was a limited series that, you know, at least we're getting something. Maybe they'll bring him back fully on his own. I don't know. But we can hold out that hope, right?
Definitely.
But that you know, how DC treats its characters on smaller platforms made me wonder, why doesn't Marvel do the same thing? I mean, they're trying to do a whole lot with, you know, they keep trying to reboot Spider-Man. And I'm like, dude, forget Spider-Man. Do an animated edition of Marvel Team-Up. That way you get to throw random... I mean, who wouldn't pay money to see an animated half hour with Spider-Man and the Hulk together?
Yeah.
And you there's all sorts of characters that Marvel can, you can do Spider-Man and Thor. One of my favorite team-ups back in the day was Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. That was a fun comic. I still remember it to this day. And they could just throw in random characters, you know, and just do Marvel Team-Up all day long.
Yeah, that would be a way to also try out new characters and see, well, not really new characters, but I guess new to the public, and see if they stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, to, you know, give them a, you know, kick the tires kind of thing. Let's see if this character makes the audience respond. Let's see if this character makes the audience respond, you know?
Yeah, because it's, I mean, Disney needs the the fuel for the fire for their streaming service anyway. So, you know, they'll hopefully, because I would like to see the kind of like the animated features for properties like Star Wars. I would like to see live action, maybe short films for Marvel properties. Like, so, you know, we got 10 episodes of Iron Fist, but how about a Daughters of the Dragon movie, you know? And it doesn't have to be 2 hours long. It'd be like, say, an hour and 20 minutes, because you don't have to really build the characters in your movie because we know them. So now they can go on a mission or have an investigation or something. And you don't have to spend so much, like, teaching us who they are, because it's like, oh, we already know them. So now you can have, like, a real short, tight, maybe 90 minutes of them kind of like hitting each other up or working with each other or trying this whole, you know, heroes for hire thing out and see what happens.
Yep. There's so many options that maybe they're taking their time, trying not to spread themselves too thin, but I would love to at least hear that there's stuff in the works. Cause I know that, Kevin Feige, they announced that, Avengers, four, the next Infinity War Part 2, which is still unnamed, is going to wrap up this current MCU. And I'm like, what does that mean? Are we rebooting certain characters? Are they moving, like, will Falcon become Cap? Will Winter Soldier become Cap? Will Riri Williams become Ironheart? We don't know what that means, but I'm curious to find out. And speaking of Marvel Animation, did you see the trailer for the new Black Panther animated?
Oh, yes, it did. big shout out to Jeffrey Thorne. I got a chance to interview him. He's the showrunner. And big shout out to Brandon Easton, who is one of the writers on the show. Super cool. Yeah, you know Brandon. So Brandon introduced us. So super, super cool. Can't wait to watch it. I'm not sure if I might try to do something live after the show, but I know I'm excited for it. I know that.
Yeah, well, for folks who hadn't yet heard the news, Sunday, September 23rd, on Disney XD, turned into Black Panther's Quest. The full title is Marvel's Avengers, Black Panther's Quest.
But yeah, it's going to be all about him, his journey, and I'm super psyched for it. Like, just super psyched.
I didn't know I had Disney XD. I can watch Disney XD.
Yeah, unfortunately, Disney XD, you actually have to have like a package for it. But, you know, I got it. I'm going to be watching it. I'm like, Sunday, I can't wait. Because this season is supposed to be pretty serious. And the interview that I had, shameless plug, I got the interview up on the channel on Nerd Soul on YouTube. He talks about how this is going to be, this won't be like a childish animation. This will be, you know, kind of more all ages. So if you're an old kid like me or a young kid, you can probably still get into Black Panther's Quest. So I'm super hyped for it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Mike, thank you for joining this Marvel Geekdom discussion tonight.
Oh, man. Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. I love, you know, saying one, I love talking about geek stuff. Two, I love you guys. It's Slice of Sci-Fi. You guys are great. And you're always putting stuff down and really dropping some pretty cool content. So, I mean, hey, being on the show, it's a slam dunk.
Well, cool. I enjoy sharing the geek love. You know, I do. Just being able to talk all sorts of cool stuff, be it sci-fi, comics, horror, whatever. Tell the people where they can find you to check out more of your stuff.
All right. Well, you can find me at NerdSoul, one word, NERDSOUL, on YouTube. Just search that term. You'll find me right there. Big, shiny, smiley face. Or you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at That Nerd Soul. And we can talk about comics. We can talk about music. We can talk about movies, whatever. And whether you like it or love it or hate it, we can discuss your reasons why.
Since we have run over time on this, we're going to just run on out from here. Enjoy everything that is Slice of Sci-Fi, be it the reviews, the other interviews we're doing, the lineup for the fall. I'm hoping to get interviews with people from Midnight Texas, from The Gifted. Those are the two big shows I'm looking forward to the most coming back. So that'll be fun. That'll be a lot of fun. And hopefully also folks from, since Lucifer moved over to Netflix and The Expanse moved over to Amazon, tracking those people down is on my mission list. So we'll have some fun with those when those come back around. So if you have any questions or comments, the number to call is 602-635-6976, or the email is summer@sliceofscifi.com. I'm sure both Nerd Soul and I might have missed a few Marvel Comics tidbits, so feel free to correct us. Because what is a good geek debate without someone standing up and demonstrating that they know one little part of the universe better than you do? Because that's what makes our geek arguments go around. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on TuneIn, and Krypton Radio. If you're listening through iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Good reviews. Let people know that you're enjoying the show, and they should take your lead and also check us out. If we're doing a bad job, please send me an email. Let me know what you think I could improve on, other than the sound quality. I'm working on that. You can also follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. We are on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, our website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on over. Like I said, contribute to the reviews being left. Comment on something you may rate better than we do. Maybe we gave something 2 stars and you thought it deserved 2.5 or 3. That's what we're here for, to start discussions. I want to thank everyone who is supporting the show through Patreon. All pledges are put to good use through paying for the website hosting, the media hosting. Every bit of your support is truly appreciated, and I really am serious about taking that one suggestion about giving away the books and Blu-rays that I receive to do reviews on. If that is something you're interested in, let me know. If you're already a Patreon subscriber, I believe you can leave comments on that on the Patreon page. Hopefully by the middle of next week, there will be a Patreon post asking about that, that you can comment on. And that URL to check out to follow us on Patreon is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. I'd also like to throw my heartfelt love and shout out to the geek rock band Sci-Fried for providing the musical theme for this show. I love them dearly, and you may enjoy their musical adventures as well. They play original rock and roll with a geek flavor to it. They do geek parodies of existing songs. I believe my first exposure to them was For Whom Babylon 5 Tolls, which is a cover of Metallica's For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is delightfully done. So go check them out. You can find their website, sci-fried.com. Mm-hmm. And if you enjoy the geek discussion version of the episodes, let me know. I can make arrangements to do them more often. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.